At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You can't, the material conditions determine what is morally acceptable and what's not. When the French resistance were blowing Nazis, that was okay because of the material conditions they were in. What? Right? Do you agree with that? But it's not always okay to just go blow people up.
No, like,
those
are...
This is just Marxist Sam Harris.
Those have nothing to do with
it. Okay, wait. I don't know if everyone heard that.
Back then people thought it was moral.
So you just dropped the line. This is just Marxist Sam Harris. Can you explain?
this is exactly Marxist Sam Harris. This guy is just using Sam Harris's argument of the moral landscape, but like with, you know, but like combining it with Marxism.
With dialectical materialism in this case, in that it's the conditions that made it morally justifiable.
Because like this is the exact same mistake that Harris makes when he says that like science can tell us what's right and wrong, and like he's not attending to the distinction between like once we figure out what our moral goals are, sure, there could be information from science that could tell us how we could achieve them, mm-hmm. but science can't tell us what your moral goals should be.
So maybe here's a good chance to do a shameless plug for yourself, your work, and where people can find you so I can adjust volume on the fly.
Sure. So I am an adjunct philosophy professor at Morehouse College in Atlanta, and I am a columnist for Jacobin Magazine. I host a show, YouTube channel, and youth podcast called Give Them an Argument, and I've written a couple of books, most recently this one.
I believe I have to grab myself a copy of that one, actually. I haven't read it, and I'm a huge Christopher Hitchens fan, so I'm very excited to.
Yeah, so I can get that from Red Emma's, redemmas.org, it's obviously much more expensive if you live outside of the U.S. because of shipping costs, but if you, for people who are within the U.S., I've got like a, you know, at this point, like one in, you know, a little over one full box. But I had like a couple boxes of these that I'd ordered directly from the distributor to use at like book events that like aren't happening right now because places have, you know, like are not doing them because of Omicron. So I've also been offering to just like sign one and stick it in the mail for anybody who wants to just like, you know, Venmo me the cover price and a couple bucks for shipping.
Fucking awesome. That sounds like a hell of a deal. And on top of that, they also get, I'm sure, your signature and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have the delight of like staring at my handwriting and trying to be like, what's Ben trying to say?
All right. I know your time is limited, and this debate doesn't go on for an exceptionally long time, but it goes on for a long enough time. Let's see if I can... Can I make it 125? I can do that. So you have a link to the video itself, and then I'm just going to play this for 2 seconds. Tell me if I... Well, let me turn this down. I think I'm pretty loud. Chat, how are the audio levels? Are we both okay? Do we sound all right? Am I way too loud? Is Ben Burgess way too quiet? Sounds good. I'm seeing good. Good is good. Sounds good to me. Oh, that's fantastic. All right. And then I guess, Ben, my last question would be, do you know anything going into this?
Literally all I know is what you told me last night.
Okay. Well, no, I was really curious your perspective because being a philosophy professor yourself, just right off the cuff, if someone was to ask you, would you use dialectical materialism as a method for... grounding, let's say, moral ideology, or is it more used as a tool in order to interpret both the conditions around us and how they are shaped by the individual and how the conditions themselves shape the individual and then the individual in turn will shape the conditions was kind of more my understanding of it.
Yeah, 100% that second one. So I think, like, sometimes I'll see people in like online lefty things like getting this from my perspective a little mixed up, but I think that the But like when you talk about historical materialism, or sometimes people say dialectical materialism when they're thinking about like maybe this applies to things besides like history, but like regardless, you're really, you know, you're on the facts side of the facts values distinction, right? You know, you're talking descriptively about, for example, how, you know, one, you know, like how society changes from one mode of production to another and stuff like that. And the question of like, what would be good if it happened just seems like a totally separate issue to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting. All right. Let's enjoy the dialectical.
Lecture me on dialectical materialism.
There's no point in having this discussion is my point.
Can you answer that question? Do you think idealism means when you construct a hypothetical? Have you read Capital? It's full of hypotheticals.
If you construct a hypothetical that has nothing to do with reality and you think that that gets you closer to the truth, that is idealism, because you are making the ideal conscious processes of thought your basis for truth.
Idealism is not what you...
My basis
for
finding truth.
I see the issue. You think idealism is when you think, which is why you don't.
Starting with a bang.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, thank you for agreeing to talk to me. I want to set this up by saying there is overlap between our audiences, and some of the people who watch your stream and watch mine have told me that I should reach out to you and talk to you, and they said you would be reasonable. I don't watch a ton of your content, you know, so I'm taking their word for it and I want to talk to you in good faith, and I know that there has been what some might consider drama or beef going on between you, me, and Luna, and some other people developing for some time. So I just want to address that and give you the opportunity to respond to some questions and things like that. So does that all sound like what we kind of agreed to in the emails?
Is that my idea? Pleasure. No, this is a bit of a novelty for me. Normally when people disagree with me, they sort of just take shots on Twitter. I actually have a lot of respect for people who like hashing it out. Whatever my reputation might precede, I do actually enjoy just calmly talking about disagreements, you know. But yeah, hit me up. You sent me an email the other day, and you know, some people in chat were complaining, like you put out a video shit talking me. But in the email, to your credit, you did say, hey, I'm gonna put this video out, so don't interpret this as some kind of like sneaky, you know. So yeah, I don't think they have anything to complain about.
Yeah, and then also, you know, people have differences about what's appropriate and what's not. One of the reasons I put the video out before the conversation was because I wanted to kind of formulate my thoughts and have some sort of basis to speak on, you know. So I do want to try to get your, yeah, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to some of the things I said. I doubt you've had time to watch it because it was a very long video.
I'm going to preface.
You know, it's only been maybe 11 hours since I uploaded it. So
no, but I have people in my community reacting to it. Some liked it, some didn't. You know, I'm known for having a disagreeable community, so I guess I'll see.
Okay, I have to stop it like this. I'm just going to preface by the first bit is a bit of interpersonal drama, and I'm just going to apologize for that. I know you're here for like a very deep philosophical.
Well, I was actually just as I was hearing all that, like I'm the only person who is in this discussion or has been referred to in this discussion I've ever heard of is Vosh, and as they're going, oh, there's this interpersonal drama between me and you, you know, this beef between me and you and this other person, I was actually just feeling sort of silently proud of myself for like not knowing about any of this.
What are you, some kind of a professor? Did you not spend all day terminally online learning about every online beef?
I'm not going to say I'm not terminally online, but I struggle to be less terminally online, and this seems like a win. But yeah, go for it.
If I could quickly recap. Non-compete, the individual in the top left corner, he is a anarcho-communist, and him and his partner Luna have a series of YouTube channels and videos on different things related to either Marxism, communism, that kind of stuff. She had produced a video about understanding dialectical materialism from the perspective of the actual school textbooks that she was given as a Vietnamese citizen. And so her and her partner have been trying to translate those textbooks into lessons that they're putting on YouTube. Vosh then watched one of those videos and then made a video on his YouTube channel that was like the most brain dead tanky thing I've ever seen, or like brain damage ensues, something like that, right? It was like a very inflammatory clickbait kind of thumbnail, and that resulted in Luna's channel getting a large amount of what EJ has claimed to be like racist attacks in the comments, racist attacks in Twitter, stuff like that. And so that led to this. But the first, I'd say like 10 or 15 minutes are about that interpersonal drama. And then they get into debating about both, moral relativism, utilitarianism, the stuff that I brought you here for.
Yeah, maybe we could skip ahead
to the like, you want to go right to the
yeah meat? just like I mean I'm not above like spending an hour at a deep dive on like whatever the hell is going on with these people. Like I could see myself getting fascinated with that and like spending way too much time doing that, but it's probably better because of time constraints to get to the main stuff we're going to talk about.
Okay, well let's get to the real content. You see, everybody, this is the difference between when I bring on just like people who are interested in drama and stuff like that and Ben Burgess is like, hey, come on, can we get to the theory? You promised me theory, Lance, come on. I mean,
but the vitriol is sort of
I just don't know these people. So.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
You don't think that if that were me and that were my audience,
it's good too, because I don't know if you know about how right now there's a huge like DMCA meta thing that's going on Twitch where like big streamers are watching Top Chef and then they're worried about getting copyright strikes. So we're kind of really helping the fair use boundaries right now. You know, we're transforming this content into something new by skipping okay. through most of okay. it.
Posting disingenuous far right pedo jacketing that was literally cut off mid sentence.
Okay, this is the part where they're talking about how she had accused him of being a pedophile. So I'll skip forward a little bit further past that.
Right, I know, right? So follow through. So in a consequentialist.
Okay, so now we're here.
Because you said that people don't address your opinions, your actual right, positions. I feel like you spent 2 hours. You call people that who don't address your actual positions bottom feeding scum. You
and call me pedophiles. That's the part that bothers me the most.
Categorically, Luna did not call you a pedophile. She said she quoted something that you said.
Wasn't
and I do happen to agree. I don't think there's any situation where an adult can have a child, a sexual relationship with a child, and it has a positive outcome. So
if you had actually seen the full bit that was clipped from, then you would agree. You saw the full bit, not just the Twitter bit, but the full thing. In which I was constructing
your
a rule
foundation
of utility.
Was that uh-huh. there can
it's right after this.
Where an adult and child can have a positive outcomes. You didn't say anyway. It's totally immaterial.
It's important. So in a consequentialist sense, you can easily construct a situation where essentially anything is fine. I'll ask you. Just follow through with me 30 seconds.
Well, I'm not an idealist. I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals that don't have any bearing on material reality.
That is. Wait, hold on. Mark, first of all, we're not talking
about hypothetical situations where adults can molest children and it has a positive outcome.
You're the one talking. Wait, hold on. First of all, Marx was a philosopher. It's not idealism. You can't move away from this. Okay, hold on. I'm not letting you paint me like this and then run the fuck away. You have to stop talking for 1 second, okay? Hold on. So imagine, all right? Imagine aliens come down to Earth and they say—
This is absolutely ridiculous, Vosh.
You've lasted 6 seconds so far, okay?
Imagine aliens. This is as hypothetical idealism as you can get. You're
like a honeymoon virgin. You got to last longer than 6 seconds. Just give me a second, okay? Did I not let you talk for a long time?
I'm not going to lie, Ben. The chat is loving your face right now. in both my chats, everyone's like, Ben's face is life. did you want to elucidate what thoughts are going
okay,
on?
Okay, okay. I guess my initial thoughts are my objection to constructing elaborate hypotheticals where pedophilia would work out well is not that it's idealism, and I'm just going to leave that there. Okay. But moving on from that, some part of it, I would say the idea that constructing hypotheticals has something to do with idealism just seems really wrong. And I think in kind of a frustrating way, because I think a lot of like kind of, let's call it internet Marxism, has absorbed the idea that, that there's something called idealism that's really bad. It's like a little bit nebulous about what idealism is, right? Like, and I think that it's maybe kind of a shame, because I actually think that like idealism and like what it actually is like is something that's kind of important to sort of realize what's wrong with. But it seems like it's being used as a kind of free floating signifier for like stuff that sounds too abstract for me.
Yeah. Okay. Can I run something by you? Like, if I was to, like, completely Cole's notes layman terms, something like this, like, idealism being that, you know, in the metaphysical, the idea that reality is only, only exists in so much that the human mind is capable of realizing and recognizing it, compared to materialism, where it exists outside of our consciousness, right? Is that just, like, kind of the Cole's notes of the two?
Yeah, so that's one thing that idealism can mean. I mean, I think in and I mean, I guess it would fit into like a broader definition, because that's like when you talk about, like, I don't know if people, anybody out there is like a history of philosophy nerd, you know, like Berkeley is an idealist, and you know, like that's definitely along the lines of what you just said, right? That the that reality can't exist except for blah blah blah. But like, I think a lot of times, specifically when Marx and later Marxists are talking about idealism, they're talking about something that's not necessarily making as extreme a claim as that, but is like more the idea, like as like a theory of history, maybe, right? So like if like historical materialism is the view that that what happens in history, or I mean, probably if you want this to be at all plausible, you're not going to say like everything that ever happens, because like that'd be goofy, right? Like you have like a materialist and, you know, it's like this is why, how materialism will tell us, you know, why like the you know, Michigan State was knocked out of the conference championship, and like what the, you know, why the plot of the last Marvel movie was what it was and everything, right? Like you probably want to narrow it down a little bit, but like but like whatever part of history you think you could have like a big overarching theory of, materialism is going to say that there's like economic factors that are going to like dictate what happened, or at least they're going to like dictate what happened much more than other kinds of things are. So like Marx will spend all this time talking about forces of production, which means roughly the capacity of a society to produce stuff, and relations of production, which is like whether we have feudalism or capitalism or whatever. And so, I think that's like materialism. Then I think idealism, you know, in the sense a lot of times Marxists are talking about when they talk about, you know, criticize idealism, isn't as extreme as like the Berkeley stuff you're talking about. It's just like sort of the idea that what really moves history is like the ideas in people's heads, you know, mm-hmm. The American Revolution happened because, you know, John Locke happened to come up with some stuff about, you know, about liberty and, you know, the government or whatever.
Which leads to like American exceptionalism as a concept, that kind of idea, or utopianism, right?
Yeah. So like I think actually, like, here's a really good concrete example we're talking about Christopher Hitchens a minute ago, and I think if you think about like, you know, new atheism, you know, the that kind of period of Hitchens' life, and like what's, you know, what's wrong with it. I mean, I don't think everything's wrong about with it. I mean, I think that even in that era, there's stuff he's right about, but mm-hmm. but I think that one thing that's wrong with it is that when you say like religion poisons everything, right? You're saying like all this stuff that you rightly have a problem with, like you know, repressive, you know, theocracies, or, you know, like wars, you know, that are justified using religion or whatever. You're saying like the cause of it is religion. Mm-hmm. And that's, in a way, that's like super idealist, because you're saying that it's like people having like religious ideas is like the main thing that's like moving these like huge historical events, rather than like there are material reasons why these things happened. And then, you know, maybe like religion is used as a justification, you know, as like a, mm-hmm. you know, justifying ideology. So you wouldn't have had like in a scenario. See, I'm going to do a hypothetical, but that's not idealism. In a scenario where like Constantine had never converted to Christianity, and like early Christianity kind of died out, and so it didn't exist. So whatever the justifying ideology was of European feudalism, it wouldn't have been Christianity. It would have been something else, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have been some nice, like, enlightenment, secular, you know, like liberal pluralism, because that wouldn't have done the job of like justified feudalism, right? You know, you would have needed something a lot nastier than that to, you know, to keep the serfs in their place and all that. So like that kind of difference, right? Like whether saying, you know, spicier example, maybe it, well, actually, which one is spicier depends on the crowd, right? But the but different example, right? Like think about think about like different solutions to like systemic racial disparities, right? And you think, okay, well, what's the what's your not diagnosis of the problem, and therefore what's your solution, right? Is your diagnosis of the problem basically that people have bad ideas in their heads, and like that we can, like, if we get like Robin DiAngelo to give enough seminars to enough people, you know, then like you've solved the problem, right? Or yeah. Or is like fundamental problem about the distribution of material resources, right? You know, that you know, Black people in the United States are so much more likely to live in poverty and be victimized by various institutions and, you know, so on than white people. And I think, you know, so I think stuff like that, I mean, to me, when you talk about like materialism versus idealism in this kind of context, mm-hmm. like you're talking about like the difference between like Hegel, who like just to kind of like do the like bumper sticker slogan kind of version of it, right? Like Hegel's theory of history is basically, you know, ideas make history, and like Marx's theory of history is that like, yeah, obviously it's more complicated, blah blah blah, but like on some really fundamental level, like economic structures and circumstances, you know, make history, and that doesn't mean there's no human agency involved, but like it's happening within a like the parameters that are set by that.
Okay.
So oops, hypotheticals are fine. You know, there are any number of like, in fact, even just now in explaining what materialism was, like I had to use hypotheticals.
Like, yeah, of course.
Like, because like how the fuck are you supposed to reason about things without like making hypothetical statements? Like, that's just weird.
Yeah.
Or like the thing I think they're probably about to get into, if I'm guessing from what you told me in context, whatever, like people will say like, oh, anytime you're like making like a moral argument, that's like idealism. It's like, no, right? Like you can have a materialist analysis of what's going on in society and why workers are in conflict with capitalists and all that stuff. Like the sort of moral question of like which side you want to win.
Yeah.
Is
or how would you even frame like a prescriptive statement in how to make things better, right? That would come down to where exactly does your like moral framework come from. I think that's like, I don't want to spoil. No spoiler warnings. Okay. I'll just.
Okay. All right. No spoilers. Let's do it.
Long time.
Yeah, this is going to be buggy, but we'll make it happen.
When you were establishing your premises, come on.
I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals.
You don't have to. You don't have to talk. You just have to listen. You just have to listen. Okay. Now you can imagine a situation in which aliens come down to Earth and they say, "We're going to blow up the whole planet unless you kill this innocent kid." Now, in a consequentialist sense, killing that innocent kid. Right, I know, right? So follow through. Follow through. So in a consequentialist, I know an inability to grasp philosophy is one of my biggest issues with Luna. It makes sense that it would apply to both of you. This philosophy and idealism aren't the same thing. Those don't mean the same thing. You can Wikipedia them.
You're constructing hypothetical situations that have no bearing.
Hypotheticals aren't. Do you think an idealism is when you construct a hypothetical? Do you think those mean the same thing? You're going to lecture me on dialectical materialism.
There's no point in having this discussion. Is my point.
Can you answer that question? Do you think idealism means when you construct a hypothetical? Have you read Capital? It's full of hypotheticals.
It has nothing to do with reality, and you think that gets you closer to the truth. That is idealism, because you are making the ideal conscious processes of thought your base.
Ben,
idealism.
I mean, your face is saying a thousand things right now.
You think idealism? Listen, if you read Dusk.
I feel like you have some thoughts. I don't know.
No, but basically, my only thought right now. We should keep going. My only thought right now is that. That like Vosh is totally right about the larger point,
okay,
about like the difference between idealism and constructed hypotheticals, right? You know, that like, yeah, you construct hypotheticals to explain materialist ideas all the time, right? Say like, this is why you couldn't have had like you know, capitalism couldn't have just like randomly arose like in like the Bronze Age or whatever, right? You know, that like, you know, like, and why that wouldn't make sense. And, you know, like, that would be a way of illustrating like a point about materialist theory of history. So obviously idealism versus materialism and illustrating your ideas using hypotheticals are totally different things. But also, are we talking about whether like it would be okay to kill kids if aliens? Maybe there's a lot of context here I don't want to know, but like this just seems like a very strange thing to dwell on.
I can spare you that side of this because it's not going to be completely relevant. They don't stay on this for too long. It goes now.
I'll just live in ignorance. Let's keep going.
All right.
It's Capital. You'll actually find hypotheticals. They're actually kind of ubiquitous. Look. Anyway, and that's
grounded in reality, though. They're grounded in actual things that happen.
So just let's finish the point. We can move on if you let me talk for 10 seconds, okay? So in that situation, you could argue consequentially that the outcomes would be good to murder that innocent child because the earth doesn't get blown up. Then, because the Twitter bit cuts me off literally mid-sentence, you follow on from that point to talk about how a rule utilitarian could have a categorical opposition to the murder of children in spite of that. The whole argument was one against the predation of children, but far-right people like to clip me out of context because it's easier than debunking.
He's referencing the pedophile clips that circulate about him. And defending right. it.
That is idealism, though.
That's not what okay. idealism means.
It is. When you think that you can find any truth that, you, like when, like, if you use a hypothetical that's grounded in reality, then that's
not. This isn't what idealism means. This isn't. It's not. You don't know what that term means.
Well, what do you think idealism means?
So, do you mean idealism like in relationship to materialism in the dialectical sense, like dialectical idealism versus dialectical materialism? Because the Hegelian concept has nothing to do with the construction of hypotheticals.
No, it doesn't. But it does. But no, it does. It does. So yes, it does, because idealism is the position that the basis for finding truth. And this actually does move towards what I wanted to talk to you about. So I'm fine with talking about this now, because I do think you misunderstand the difference between materialism and idealism. And I think you don't understand the relationship between Hegel and Marx and Engels. And I don't think that you understand the difference between historical materialism and dialectical materialism. So these are all things I did want to ask you about. So. Hegel's whole dialectic and the problem that Marx and Engels had with Hegel was that he sought truth on the basis of the ideal and consciousness. Okay. Marx and Engels broke with that, and they thought that the material world in objective sense data, empirical sense data, is the primary basis for truth. But they were not empiricists. They were not positivists, meaning they didn't think you could only find truth in sense data, in empirical data. Okay. Do you agree with all of those things I just said, or do you know those things?
No, I don't think that's correct. I think that's simplified in some respects and incorrect in others.
All right. Well, just tell me what you think idealism is, Vaj.
The dialectical disagreement. So first of all, idealism is a philosophical tradition dating back millennia. What you refer to as ideal, like, I don't know, there are like 20 different kinds of idealism depending on where you're pulling from. The juxtaposition usually posed against what Marx wrote was Hegelian dialectical idealism, which was the idea that social advancements, that ideas, that human civilization was moved forward as a product of the antagonisms which arise in people's thoughts as they have competing values and virtues which fight against each other, and you achieve synthesis, which is ideally an advancement of the idea, right, of the concept.
Okay, yes.
And Marx's...
Can I stop you for one moment?
Sure.
Can I stop you for one moment? Okay. So an example of that, I think... And one of the big problems we have on the left today, and a problem that I've seen you have in your discussions, is that we have these hypothetical discussions about what we should do or shouldn't do, or after the revolution, will this happen or will this exist, and blah, blah, blah. And we construct hypothetical scenarios about the future, and then we think that that's what we should base all of our praxis and activism on. So in other words, we come up with the ideas first, which Engels described as utopianism, Marx and Engels described as utopianism. And then we think like, okay, we've got this perfect vision for where we want to be. Now we have to get from here to there, and we have to dogmatically stay that course. Would you agree that that's an idealist basis for moving a movement forward, a political movement?
I think it's utopian, but I don't think it's a dialectically idealist concept. I think you could frame that belief system through dialectical materialism just fine.
You could frame that system through dialectical materialism, frame a utopian system? Or what do you mean? I don't understand what you mean.
Dialectical materialism is only a mode of analysis. It's a theory to explain the movement, the evolution of human behavior, society, social developments. You know, you could apply it to anything. You can analyze any system, any society through the lens of dialectical materialism. It doesn't have to be, there isn't a dialectically materialist way of doing a thing, you know, outside the process of analysis. You can't like make a civilization and go like, this time we'll do it dialectically materially.
The point is that you're putting the cart before the horse if you say this would be a perfect society.
Yeah, I just want to pause it for one sec.
A priori.
A, because I've seen you receive a lot of psychic damage, and B, because for some reason the chat is obsessed with this ad in the top right corner. Chat, you need some like bonking sticks or something. Anyways, Ben, what would your initial take be from the material that has been passed back and forth?
Yeah, I think that the stuff about sense data was kind of helpful, and I don't really understand what he was trying to say there. I mean, I think that because it's a little bit, I think there might be a little bit of confusion there between like how we find out what's true and then like what you're claiming about what is true, right? So I think you start talking about sense data and all that. That sounds like we're doing epistemology. We're trying to, we're trying to figure out, it's like, okay, how do we know what's true?
Yeah.
And whereas if you're, you know, like talking about, you know, historical materialism, or again, you know, people might sometimes use phrase dialectical materialism to mean like same kind of method analysis applied to other things, that it seems like you're talking about like what you claim is true, right? So in other words, I think that the difference between idealism and materialism is a difference about what you think is true, not necessarily a difference about how you find out what's true. And
Would you agree with the statement that it's not something that is broadly used to apply like a prescriptive statement to how we should do things, more of an analysis of how exactly you know, a certain system, or you can use it to explain multiple different things. Like, I've seen people even try to explain moments from the Big Bang onward using, like, you know, a material analysis. Yeah, the amount of energy atoms would be exchanging with each other to pair off into bonds and things like that, right? But I've seen that. I'm not saying whether or not that's correct.
There are people who talk like that, and to be fair, I don't think it was quite as bad as that, right? But I mean, like, Engels wrote a book called Dialectics of Nature, which is sort of doing, obviously he's not talking about the Big Bang and particles, you know, since the 19th century, but like it's kind of a little bit of a version of something like that for, you know, trying to talk about natural science. And we'll say I'm not a big fan of any of that. I mean, like, that just sort of seems like, I mean, I don't know. I'm a simple man. I think if you want to know what's true about biology or physics, you should like ask a biologist or a physicist, and not like try to find like eternal truths and like the collected writings of Marx and Engels and like figure out, like extrapolate from that, you know, what's true about biology or physics. And if there's some kind of like echo of like some Hegel or Marx thing and whatever you do learn, I guess that's interesting. But I mean, like, that's not like, I don't know how relevant that is to anything. I mean, I think that the, again, I think materialism, in the sense that we're interested in here, is a claim about how human history works, right? Why the legal and political superstructure of a society is the way that it is at any given time, why the underlying, you know, economic relations are the way that they are at any given time. And you know, of course, that's going to be very relevant to the prescriptive question, which is, you know, what should you, you know, what do we want to do politically? You know, how should you change it? But like, it's going to be relevant to it in the sense that any time that like, that you've like, it's that any kind of moral argument, right? Or just, you know, argument about what to do, of course, like, there are usually going to be empirical things that are relevant, right? I mean, like if I...
Oh, and they influence each other as well.
Yeah, like they can be relevant in the sense that, like, okay, so, like, if think about what's wrong with, like, all right, we'll just pull from the classics here. Like, think about Ben Shapiro being interviewed by Andrew Neil, mm-hmm. and, you know, and Neil asks him why he supports the, like, super harsh anti-abortion laws my current state of residence, and Shapiro says science, and then I think sends us like a sentence or two saying that's because science tells us that a fetus is a human life, and it's like, okay, sure, I mean, you know, that's like a, you know, biological checklist for what counts as life, you know, you know, fetus, you know, check a lot of those things, and it's certainly, you know, human. I mean, nobody's going to, like, you know, it's not like anybody thinks it starts out as a raccoon and just slowly, you know, turns into a human being. But where the action really is going to be in that argument is like, okay, premise one, a fetus is a human life. That's the empirical premise. And that's an important part of how you're going to get to the pro-life position. But like, premise two is going to be everything that's a human life, you know, how, you know, has this right against, you know, against being terminated that like overrides a pregnant woman's, you know, right to bodily autonomy. And like, so you can't get just from the first one to the conclusion. I mean, this is what's wrong with Sam Harris when he says that science can tell us, you know, can tell us what our morality should be, you know, because yeah, again, it could give you information that's going to be super duper relevant. I mean, like, there are things that like,
it can inform our decisions, but ultimately, it can inform
your decisions, yeah. But it's not gonna tell you. I mean, like, you could, in principle, completely accept Marx's theory of history and think it's 100% right. But, like, also, I don't know, you hate poor people or something, and so you think, yeah, this is like the, you know, that is exactly how capitalism came about. It's exactly how it works, but it's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I want to keep it as long as possible. And if it's socialism or barbarism, then I choose barbarism. You know, like you could
that's,
have that combination
being
of views.
That's being clipped. I was like, someone's going to clip that now. that's on Twitter now. It's
just the part, like the part of the sentence where I say, so if it's socialism or barbarism, I choose barbarism. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, it's going to be like Radlib, Ben Burgess, you know, supporting U.S. imperialism and is a huge fan of capitalism. And we're like, oh, great. It's happening again.
Yeah, totally. But I think that, I mean, like, again, it's going to be relevant, like, the same way, like, if you're saying, like, I don't know, you know, you're in one of those, like, there's this, you're about to get out of helicopter because there's, like, about to be, like, a, you know, avalanche that's going to crush everything under it or something, and there's some, like, bodies lying in the streets, and you know, you find out one of these guys is actually still alive, and that's of course a super relevant piece of empirical information for like what you decide to do, right? Mm-hmm. But that by itself doesn't tell you, do we risk everybody else by trying to go back to them or not? That's still a moral argument. And the same way, I think that if you have like what like a Marxist theory of history is going to tell you is how social change can happen, right? Like what it would take that to happen. And of course, if you want, like, if you don't like capitalism and you would prefer something else, and, you know, you think, you know, poverty and racism and all that stuff are really bad and you want to overcome them, then yeah, super relevant. Mm. But like, by itself, there's nothing about that, like, factual claim about how reality works that's going to tell you whether you should, like, want historical change to happen and so use all that information to figure out how to make it happen. Or whether, like, you hate that idea, like, you're going to use this information to, you know, to stop it from happening, if at all possible, right? Like, so,
yeah.
Or like, you know, Kant has an example, the groundwork, the metaphysics of morals, about how, like, the same medical knowledge that would help a doctor cure somebody, you know, might also, like, tell them how they could, like, kill them so nobody would ever know. And, you know, and like, surely, like, medical science by itself isn't going to tell you which one to do. And, like, there are situations where that can be a real dilemma. I mean, like, if you remember, in 2018, early 2019, when Bolsonaro was originally running for president of Brazil and he got stabbed.
Yeah. Yeah, he's having problems right now because of the blockage.
Yeah, well, look, if you're a doctor treating Bolsonaro, I mean, this could be a real dilemma, you know, like,
do I save humanity in the Amazonian rainforest right now by doing something that is objectively condemned by society and could be considered evil? That's, yeah. There's the trolley question that no one's ever asked before, the Bolsonaro trolley question. Okay.
Just to stop any of this from being legally actionable, I'm just going to stop this train of thought right here.
Yeah. In Roblox, Ben Burgess is joking, of course. This is a satire and parody. Anyways, hey, can I do one quick bookkeeping thing? And I'm going to hit play right afterwards. Chat, please respect the mods. I know there's a lot of people here watching right now. I know this is a very spicy stream that me and Ben are doing, and this is a very contentious topic. But please just listen to the mods if they're telling you to chill out. They're trying to keep like hundreds of people relatively unscathed in a very fast-moving chat. So just you know, listen to the mods, treat them well, and also go check out Trashcan's channel, who also just appeared. And then
you find out through praxis what works and what doesn't. That was a big important thing that Marx Engels pointed out, was that you can only find truth through practice and praxis.
I'm not a utopian. I agree that it is dumb to conceptualize an ideal society. And
okay,
then
so when you conceptualize things with aliens and things that don't happen on planet Earth, that's a useless rhetorical strategy.
Oh my God, this is what you were running back to? No, okay.
Yes.
So, no. Let me explain. Please listen. This can be instructive, okay? There is a massive difference between framing your pragmatic advocacy for a political system based on a utopian vision of a future that you don't have material conditions to account for, and the construction of a hypothetical to illustrate the dynamics of a moral system. If you read Capital, I promise you will find hypotheticals that are very outlandish.
Hold on. Your whole thing, you believe that you can construct a moral system where you can, you know, before
I didn't construct it. It's just rule utilitarianism.
You can't, the material conditions determine what is morally acceptable and what's not. When the French Resistance were blowing up Nazis, that was okay because of the material conditions they were in. What? Right? Do you agree with that? But it's not always okay to just go blow people up.
No, like, those are...
This is just Marxist Sam Harris.
Those have nothing to do with
it. No, I don't know if everyone heard that.
Back then people thought it was moral.
So you just dropped the line. This is just Marxist Sam Harris. Can you explain?
this is exactly Marxist Sam Harris. This guy is just using Sam Harris's argument of the moral landscape, but like with... You know, but like combining it with Marxism,
with dialectical materialism in this case, in that it's the conditions that made it morally justifiable.
Because like this is like the exact same mistake that Harris makes when he says that like science can tell us what's right and wrong, and like he's not attending to the distinction between like once we figure out what our moral goals are, sure, there could be information from science that could tell us how we could achieve them, but science can't tell us what your moral goals should be.
Right.
And he has all these like weird, sophistical ways of like trying to blur that distinction. And like, this is just the same argument. This is the same argument, right? That like this, like, yeah, sure. Like if you know stuff about the material conditions in Nazi occupied France could absolutely be relevant to, they could be part of a like formative argument for saying, yeah, we should totally do this thing that, you know, might be wrong under other circumstances, but they can't get you all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, I don't think I could be accused of being a uncritical Vosh apologist, given that literally the only time I've ever talked to him was to argue with him.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would. Yeah.
No, but he's 100% right about what he said at the beginning of this part, you know, which actually, I should actually also say, to be fair, non-compete said something correct for like a second, but then like I think he didn't follow up on the thought, right? Which is that he said that it can, what, you know, historical materialism can do for you is it can tell you what will work and what won't work. That was right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that is exactly the claim that historical materialism is going to make. So if you think it's true, yeah, that's what it can do. Right, you know, that it can tell
it's determining what you want to work, though, is the question, right? Because where exactly are you going to make the prescription? Like, it'll tell you how this works, but how do you want to apply that in the real world is, I think, the problem they're having.
Oh, exactly. No, exactly. Like it can. Like there's a huge difference between if you have such and such goal, then this empirical information, or in this case, like a, you know, materialist analysis of history, is going to tell you what will or won't be an effective strategy for reaching that goal, but that's a completely different thing from telling you what your goals should be.
Right. Okay.
That's exactly the opposite of what I'm saying.
The material conditions of 16th century agriculture demanded the existence of slavery. Do you think that's moral then? Like, what?
That's my point, is that it has, I don't, I believe my morality stems from dialectic, like, so let me put it this way.
But dialectical materialism isn't a moral system. It's just an analysis of history. These are the people who criticize my philosophy.
Here's where you're wrong, because you are conflating empiricism and positivism and determinism with dialectical materialism.
What
Engels pointed out, Vosh, is that through conscious activity, we can impact the material world and we can make changes. And so, for instance, people can liberate themselves by developing mass movements, but they have to develop them with an understanding of the material processes of reality. If you try to develop, so for instance, of course, all poor people don't want to be poor anymore, right? But like, if you have false consciousness and you don't have a firm grasp on how material processes work and how the world actually develops and how things can develop and how applying your consciousness to material conditions will develop reality, if you don't have that, then you will fail and fail and fail again. That's why Engels and Marx wrote Socialism, Utopian, and Scientific, because they wanted to stop.
So I'm just curious about your thoughts on the line, because I saw your face wince there. Was it the material conditions of the 16th century did not necessitate slavery?
No, I mean, that was, you know, I understood what he was saying there, right? Because that's like, if it's, I think his point in that line was that non-compete is like sort of jamming together the questions of like what's possible or impossible in any given scenario and like what you want to happen, right? Like so if it's, you know, hypothetically, if it's true that it wouldn't have been possible to abolish slavery in the 16th century, that's like a moral tragedy, right? Like that's because like this, like the most horrific institution that's ever existed is gonna, like, there's no way to stop it existing for a while. But no, I think
as in the dialectical materialism alone is not the sole reason why it would have been morally correct to abolish slavery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like that's just okay. A separate issue, right? Like, do you want to abolish slavery, and is it going to be possible at any given time? And if it is possible, like, what's going to be an effective strategy for doing it? Right? I mean, those are all three separate questions, right? Dialectical materialism might tell you something about the is it possible, and if it is possible, what would be an effective strategy? But it's not going to tell you how you should feel, you know, about slavery. But I did want to follow up on the utopianism thing, because I think this is where non-compete has like half a point, but I think only half, you know, that like that I think that this, because like when like Engels is criticized in utopianism and the Socialism, Utopian, and Scientific, the anti-During, right, he's like, his point is like, or at least his central point, as I understand it, right, is that just sort of dreaming up in abstract, you know, here's what, like, you know, like if I could just will it into existence, right, you know, here's the kind of society that I would like to exist, is going to be like unhelpful if that's detached from some kind of understanding of like what's possible or impossible to like actually bring about at this time in history, you know, given these conditions or whatever. But that doesn't actually tell you anything about, like, again, what you should want to happen, right? I mean, like, mm-hmm. like it might tell you how far you're going to be able to realize you do things that accord with your values at any given time, but it's not going to tell you what your values should be. And I think that what non-compete is doing here is sort of jamming together the question or blurring the line between the question of like that sort of maybe correct critique of utopianism, that if you like sort of dream up all the details of how you think everything should work, mm-hmm. rather, you know, like that's going to be unhelpful, because what you should do is like you should think about like how we could go about affecting change given what's concretely possible in these circumstances or something like that. Like, I think he's just jamming that together with like, either you just shouldn't have moral views, or somehow, and again, this is where we get back to Marx and Sam Harris, like somehow or another, dialectical materialism is going to tell you what your moral views are, which just seems totally confused to me.
Okay. And just to clarify to the people in chat saying that Ben is not thinking about the horrors of, say, like chattel slavery, his statement, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Ben, is that is that the analysis of 16th century slavery doesn't itself, like from a dialectical materialist perspective, tell you whether it was morally right or wrong. Whereas like everyone here, I think being on the left especially, would agree, and most people just in general society, yes. that it was horrifying, that is absolutely the worst. But you cannot find out whether it's good or bad simply looking at it through the lens of dialectical materialism from a relationship of the like the materials in and of themselves is kind of the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I also said that if that's true, and I'm not even like necessarily granting that it's true, but right. like, you know, again, I'm being an idealist here and using hypotheticals. If it's true that slavery couldn't have been abolished at that point in history, and I also said that's a moral tragedy because it's the most evil institution that's ever existed in human history, right? So like if you couldn't, if there was no way to, you know, like in other words, like if you're take it back from like the 16th century to ancient Rome, right? I mean, if you're looking at like Spartacus's revolt and saying like there's no way it's possible that this is just going to be successful, and they're going to create like a society based on free labor under these material circumstances, that's an awful, awful thing if that's true, right? Like as a time traveler back then, it might even still be worth trying, right? You know, like even if you think that your analysis tells you it's not going to work, you know, at least you can, you know, retain some kind of dignity by not taking it lying down, you know. But again, these are all just separate questions, right? Like what it's possible to achieve at a given point. If it is possible, what strategy is going to be effective in helping you achieve it? And then like what you're trying to achieve in the first place. That last one is a values question. Those first two are facts questions.
Mm-hmm. They were organizers. They were activists. They were actually going out. They were members of groups. They were doing things, you know, and they had praxis. And they were so tired of having hypothetical conversations with people.
There's a difference between opposition to constructing a hypothetical entirely and opposition to the idea of basing one's entire political advocacy off of hypotheticals and nothing else. But that's because pragmatic advocacy for a political system and ethical systems are two different things. Hypotheticals are the only things that you can really use to construct a normative ethical system, because you have to isolate.
Where are you getting this information from? Or is this something you just came up with? Or what is this? What are you talking about?
Okay. If you're constructing an ethical system, or I guess learning to understand one.
What's an ethical system? What's a moral system?
A normative process by which you determine whether an action or a person is good or bad. In my case, an action, because I'm not an virtue ethicist.
Okay. And do you think that you can make one moral system that applies in all conditions, or like what are you talking about?
Yeah, the goal would be to construct a normative ethical system that's universally applicable. It is a constant subject of debate in philosophy.
That's idealism.
That is not idealism. That's not what idealism means.
It is, because you're saying that you can hypothetically construct. You're saying that like if you sat down and thought hard enough, you had a big enough piece of paper and you wrote down enough if-then Boolean logic statements, you could construct exactly what is morally correct in any given situation in your mind.
Well, the difficulty usually isn't whether something is good or bad. It's whether or not we can assemble all the necessary information to determine whether or not it's good or bad. Like hypotheticals are the easy isolating factor.
That's what Martin Engels, that was their big breakthrough. That's what made them, they synthesized empiricism and positivism of people like Hume and Ricardo and Smith and the idealism of Hegel. And they realized that there's actually this dialectical relationship between material reality, material conditions, and human consciousness.
That's not a matter of ethics. If we're talking about ethics, you need hypotheticals because they allow you to isolate conditions that you can use to determine the frameworks of your system. If you're only using practical examples for an ethical consideration, then you're post-hocking everything that happens. You're like, well, was that train crash bad? And you're like, I don't have a system for this. And you're like working through it. Dialectical materialism is just like this. Dialectical materialism is a system devised to allow us to analyze the world and to provide us a framework for understanding. That's what an ethical...
Marx and Engels, Socialism, Utopian and Scientific, wrote... The final causes of all social changes and political revolutions are to be sought not in men's brains, but in men's better insights into eternal truth and justice. Not in men's better insights into eternal truth and justice, but in changes in the modes of production and exchange. They very specifically
said
we can't just sit around and think about what's best. We have to go out and apply things in the material world.
That has nothing to do with that. Okay, you realize that Marx had a doctorate, right? Like clearly sitting and thinking is part of the process. I think it's okay to sit down and read out a few hypotheticals to learn an ethical system. Like, would you like say this to some kid in kindergarten? Like, you know, action is what we need. Like, yes, it's okay to do hypotheticals. It's okay to learn ethical systems. And by the way, rule utilitarianism is really applicable with socialism. It is incredibly naturally, almost intuitively, in line with the moral assertions a person might make to argue in favor of socialism.
Martin Engels did not just sit around thinking, okay? Like in their brains.
We're not talking about just sitting around. Wait, are you against the concept of philosophy?
You have to base your analysis on objective data. And there are two sources of objective data. There's the material world, and then there are objective social relations. That's the way Marx and Engels put it anyway.
Okay, let me test your intuitive system then. Okay? Mm-hmm. Let's hit it then. Is it wrong to hit a person?
It absolutely depends on the material conditions and the situation and the objective social relations at play. There's no universal answer to that question.
Okay, I agree. So one might say that
social relations, do I need to define that term?
Circumstances matter. So I agree with that. So let's say, let's use an example where all of the cases are known. You said that I was too vitriolic to Luna. Why is that bad?
I said that you need to look at the evidence that it's being presented to you and consider whether you think it's bad or not.
And
I'm
I have.
Asking you to apply this kind of analysis to your own platform.
Well, I've done that, but you clearly think it was bad because otherwise you wouldn't take issue with it enough to talk to me about it. I think I've acted in error.
Because I saw evidence, which is that after you talked about her, not just once, but every time you've done a stream about her, I saw a huge uptick in people throwing racist, vitriolic shit at her.
Why is that bad?
That she doesn't usually receive on that scale. That's the evidence I presented to you.
Okay, why is that
bad? I was convinced by that. Excuse me?
Why is that bad?
Why is that bad? Why is that bad? Because a human being suffered because of, as a direct result of actions that you performed.
Do you think that human suffering is always bad? What about when we shot Nazis?
I don't think that Luna, if you think that Luna deserves to suffer, do you think Luna deserves to suffer? Is that your point here? By being attacked by racists? Is that what you're saying?
You're the one who said that it was bad because a person suffered. So logically, I extend from that. You think when suffering happens.
Are you denying that it's bad that Luna suffered because racists sent racist vitriol at her?
I'm asking you your position. Why was it bad?
I would say that it's definitely bad. Because it's promoting the racist system of white supremacism, which oppresses billions of people around the planet.
Why is that bad?
It is bad because we should seek to liberate all of humanity from oppression.
Why?
So the main point of Marx and Engels is to... You realize that the main point of dialectical materialism and historical materialism is to free humanity from all class antagonisms so that we can finally begin... writing history ourselves. That's basically the way that they put it.
Why did they think that was worth doing?
Because throughout modern history, or throughout history since class antagonisms arose, let's put it that way, human beings have been driven forward by oppressive relations with the means of production. And that limits humans and it causes a lot of suffering.
I don't understand these terms. You already said suffering can be good or bad. Limiting? What makes these things bad? I don't understand.
Okay, limiting oppression, giving people the ability to develop their own material conditions and to have the freedom to do what they want. That's what they talked about in
Why should people have freedom? Should people have freedom to murder?
Vash, freedom to live?
It would be nice to have an ethical system you could apply to answer these questions, right?
No, okay. A person has the right... This is... Okay. Let's go back to the material conditions, all right? If you're being oppressed, right? If you're being oppressed and somebody is forcing you to work for them as a slave or a wage earner or whatever, that is a form of exploitation, okay?
Isn't that their freedom? You're talking about restricting the freedom of people to do unto others what they will.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are. You're saying that you don't like it when people exercise their freedom to oppress others. You said you value freedom.
Vash. Listen, the fact of the matter is that Marx and Engels believed that exploitation through class antagonism is not good. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree. I think I'm a Marxist, at least in some respects. But I have an ethical system that informs the reasons why I feel Marxism is worth following.
And what is that?
Rule utilitarianism. Or I guess some people say you can fold that into act utilitarianism. So let's just say utilitarianism.
But this isn't
a matter of idealism. It's a matter of understanding why we fight for what we fight for. What you're arguing for is intuitive morality, which is exactly what leads to every goddamn pogrom and mass slaughter that's ever happened throughout history. When people post-hoc justify what's right or wrong, only the construction of and adherence to moral systems that you can understand can prevent that kind of stuff from happening. And it's why I'm hammering on it right now. I don't like it when you're laughing like, oh, hypotheticals, oh,
material
thinking...
Material conditions will dictate what's acceptable or not.
Like, why are you against the concept? Do you think you're smarter than, like, all of, like, ethics? Like, the whole philosophy?
No, that's the most complicated... If you are... I don't know how to explain this to you. Like you have to look at history, right? That's one way to look at it. So, whenever people have been enslaved, if they rise up and use violence to liberate themselves, then that is probably acceptable because they had material conditions in which violence was being...
Nazis?
Rising up against the Nazis was acceptable, yes.
No. After World War I, the Nazis claimed that Jewish bankers were holding the country down through...
And that was false consciousness, because that wasn't actually happening.
How can you tell?
That was false consciousness. They constructed a moral utilitarian rule that did not align with reality.
The Nazis were not utilitarian. Careful with that. Very, very not utilitarian.
The point is that they were their ideology was not aligned with reality.
How can you tell?
Because Jews don't actually control banks in the world.
There was a disproportionate number of Jewish control of banks in Germany during the Weimar Republic.
All right, gosh, we're done here. Thank you. Goodbye. This is, that's all I need to hear.
You don't have an ethical... Oh, my God.
So I'll let it play out a little bit longer afterwards, but that's it ends with it's quite a finale, out of nowhere. I suppose I should say, just for the record, I'm sure most people in the audience are well aware that is that's an anti-Semitic myth. It is not based in reality. I think it's historically less than 1% of Jewish people in the Weimar Republic had control of lending banks, usury, any of that kind of stuff. So it's not true. It is deeply deeply debunked at this point. But anyways, Professor, I figured I'd let you take it away. Yeah. You seem to have ingested quite a bit of information. So
I mean, it's right. I guess it could be like a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage, but still, disproportionate. I take it his point was like he was driving at. I think it's maybe an unfortunate example, but I think it's like probably, I'm guessing, the point Vosh was driving at there is something like, okay, but like, what's the significance of this fact, right? Why does that matter, right? And like to try to take it back to the normative. I guess non-compete was saying, again, I think he kind of said some correct stuff in there, but I think he was connecting the dots in a weird way. So I think all that stuff about Marx and Engels are talking about, when Engels uses that phrase, scientific socialism, it's like, the point is to, you want to resist oppression and bring about more human freedom and all that stuff. That's all right, right? From my perspective, like really close to getting important point here, but he's not quite getting it, which is just that, like when Engels uses that phrase scientific socialism, like what he means is it's like an engineering science. In other words, like you have this goal, and you take what you can learn from social science to figure out how to achieve that goal. The same way, actual engineering, like you take what you learn from physics and you use it to figure out how to construct a bridge or whatever. But the physics isn't telling you to construct bridges, right? You just have that goal that you use physics to, figure out how to, apply it for that goal. And so I think the point that Vosh is trying to lead him to, and I think he's probably being a little provocative with the thing about the Weimar Republic, just like he was earlier with the thing about slavery, with the kind of picking the examples. The slavery one, I feel like I get what he was saying with the Weimar Republic one. Maybe it would have become clearer if that had played out, but I don't really get what the point was. That moment, I don't know if you have a take on that.
I think I could be wrong because this is about when I stopped watching, but I think there's an explanation.
Yeah. I'd run too if I was him. Oh, that was good.
Let me speed it up.
God, I can't believe people in my community like that guy. That was funny as hell. You gotta lean into the clips. That's what you gotta lean into. Oh, in case anyone's curious about what's happening there, that guy was actually too stupid to have a conversation with. He actually thought that the construction of an ethical system and using hypotheticals to understand ethics meant that you were some kind of anti-material idealist. He was dismissing the concept of philosophy. Marx was a philosopher. I mean, Marx would be like laughing. Yeah. Yeah, he couldn't comprehend the idea of an ethical system. Did he learn anything, though? I feel like for a bit there, he got close to understanding. He got close to understanding when I was asking, why is freedom wrong? Why is suffering bad? So on and so on. Dishonest or stupid? No, I think, he might just be stupid. Vosh, give us an actual lesson on rule utilitarianism now, please. I'd like to see how you'd answer these questions. Dude, this is so easy, man. It's so easy, okay? So, as a moral anti-realist, I don't think there's any way to objectively determine what is good or bad in the universe. However, I do think that you can build systems all of human history and have, a strong understanding of whether something is good or bad. You guys are the most annoying part. You're like, clip, who cares? I don't care. He's got Luna on the screen now and she's bad-mouthing you. I feel like any obligation that I had to take him seriously probably vanished when he was giving me shit for being mean to his wife. And then... the negative three me's. They're every person who's moved leftwards from people like that are I was really nice. Look at how quickly his worldview falls apart. He couldn't answer anything, basic ethical questions, and he was stumbling, the freedom to live, they have nothing, It's really pathetic. By the way, just to be clear, the reason why The reason why I'm okay with being mean to these guys is because they're like the cancer of socialism. You know what I mean? There are people.
Okay,
large.
That's,
no,
that's
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to get it. It's too relevant here. So, I don't really know where he was going with the Weimar example. I think that his point about the slavery example is that, like, if you believe that, like, slave rebellions at an earlier stage of human history couldn't have been successful because, you know, the material conditions of the society wouldn't have been conducive to, like, a system of capitalism based on free labor, then even if that's true, that tells us nothing about whether slavery was really wrong or whether, like, maybe it would have even been, like, morally correct to just, like, rip it all down, right? I mean, if it's, like, society kind of falls apart, you know, like, maybe it's even correct to do that because slavery is so evil, you know, like, these are all just separate questions, right? Like, the, like, is slavery wrong question is just a separate question from, like, the at what point in history would it have been possible to overcome it? Like,
yeah, my
point.
Well, my interpretation of that, which did he say 16th century? Yeah. I guess I think he meant to say 17th century. But either way, if it was related to that, I thought it was that dialectical materialism cannot, in and of itself, be used to decide or determine whether or not it would be morally correct or incorrect to have performed slavery, which we all agree is just an abhorrent thing that human beings have done. But just, I think, using that lens alone, like, being like, well, based on the material conditions and what everyone was doing at the time, like, I mean, yeah, the North Atlantic slave trade was decidedly a capitalist venture in order to generate vast amounts of profit, yeah, while dehumanizing people in the process, yeah, and treating them like animals, right? And so it's not as if this was, like, this was purely necessity that this had to happen. This was scaled up as time went on kind of idea. That would be at its most generous. I don't understand the final one. I think that one's just kind of trying to be edgy to try and push, I guess, maybe the opponent with, like,
maybe all he was trying to do with the second one was just to get, like, non-compete to make some unambiguously moral claims so he could, like, start to push him on it. Although, I don't know. Like, he'd already done that, so I don't really know what the point was at that point. But, like, because non-compete was saying all these moral things, right? That, like, you know, oppression is bad, and, you know, freedom is good, and, you know, whatever, killing Nazis in occupied France is good, whatever. These are all moral claims.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, like I said, I'm not crazy about some of the examples, and, like, I'm happy not to know, but, like, the opening example in particular, I wasn't crazy about, but whatever. Like, I think the main point Vosh is making is a correct one, although stuff at the very end about being a moral non-realist, but also being a utilitarian, I'm not quite sure what that means, but whatever, put that aside. I think that, like, his overall point is a correct one, which is just, like, yeah, materialism is a theory about facts, and if it's a correct theory about facts, it can tell you stuff about what would be effective or ineffective strategies for bringing about your goals, or if you can bring them about in the first, but whatever, right? Like, all of that stuff. But it can't tell you what your goals should be, right? I mean, like, and I think when people started talking about how, like, they constructed this because they were interested in fighting oppression and all that, like, it kind of seemed like he was, like, right on the edge of getting that point, that normative questions and factual ones are just different. The factual questions might be very, very relevant to the normative ones because, like, if you say whatever, I don't know, if we have, there are like the future, there are like robots that are treated in certain ways, and like you might find out that the robots are like sentient, and you know that they could feel pain or whatever. Then like that's like super normatively relevant, right? But like by itself, that doesn't do all the way to like doing this or whatever. Like you need some kind of moral principle about it's wrong to cause suffering or stuff like that. And I felt like there were points in it, maybe this could be like the last point. Like I felt like there were points in it where it felt like all non-compete was really trying to say that like how to apply your values in any given situation depends on material facts about those situations, which is fine, right? Like that, like, you know, if you have some sort of overall principle about how like suffering is bad, and you want to reduce the amount of it, then like it could still be that like, you know, blowing up Nazis in crowded areas in occupied France, you know, might still be the thing that in that particularly dismal situation is the thing that'll bring about the least suffering overall, as opposed to not doing that or whatever. Whereas like if you're in, you know, America in 2022, there's no equivalent of that. That's true. That's all fine, right? Like that could all be true, right? But like, that just seems like a slightly separate question, right? Like that, like, yeah, absolutely. Like facts can tell you things about how to, like if I think, that like if I could just like somehow will it into existence that we would be living under socialism tomorrow, I would obviously do that. Mm-hmm. But like,
I push the button.
I would push the socialism button, no question. Right?
Why doesn't AOC do it? I ask this every day.
Yes, exactly. and so, you know, if we were just having a moral argument about like, would it be better, assuming that both were equally possible to do at this moment? We've got a socialism button, and then we've got a like slowly achieve some basic reforms button, and say, okay, would it be morally better to push the socialism button or the slowly achieve some reforms, you know, that might like start some process that one day in the future might lead to rupture with capitalism, maybe, right? Obviously you should push the socialism button. That's clearly the morally correct option, but like that we don't actually have one.
Mm-hmm. Yet.
Like it could be that, right. That are, you know, hard, people are hard at work on it. You know, it's like the end of, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, top men, right? You know,
we need top men around.
But like until the top men are successful, it could be that the, like an analysis of material conditions might tell us that like the, you know, that like, even though we would prefer to just have socialism tomorrow, that like the only way to get there is some kind of strategy that involves, you know, like a lot of, you know, a lot of fighting for reforms that seem really petty, and we wish we could do more and more quickly, and a lot of like, you know, Starbucks workers like going through hell to just get like an extra buck an hour and like be able to like bargain over about like how to schedule shifts, like whatever. That's like the material analysis can tell us that under this particular conditions, this is the most we might be able to like conform reality to our values right now, because like that quote he read, the Engels quote from the Socialist and Utopian Scientific, that like what is possible or impossible at a given, you know, historical moment, right? Like what happens is more a function of, you know, modes of production, right? How production is organized, what the productive capacity is of society. That's all the stuff that in broad strokes is going to tell you, you know, what happens. But, you know, he could have also quoted from the 18th Brumaire, you know, of Louis Napoleon, where Marx says that, you know, men make their own history, but not under conditions of their own choosing. And that's the point that, and if you think there's no human agency, it just doesn't matter what anybody thinks, or like what anybody thinks, like what values anybody has, what anybody thinks, right? That's just totally irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, no point to having the conversation. There's also no point to having the argument that not competing Voss are having, right? Like that, there's no point trying to convince people not to be idealists if that's true, right? Like convincing people not to be idealists would be pointless too. But like, you know, so yeah, if you go to that like super duper extreme claim, like materialism on steroids, then I guess like, it still wouldn't be true that like materialist analysis of history is going to tell you what's right or wrong, but it might just tell you that it doesn't matter what anybody thinks is right or wrong, or whether anybody's a materialist or idealist. But if you, but the more reasonable claim that like one that Marx is making in the 18th Brumaire about making your own history, but not under conditions of your own choosing, you know, I mean, really seems like the point that's like, yeah, humans act, but like what you're going to be able to get, you know, a large enough group of people to act on is going to depend on these material things that like, if you're appealing to, you know, their interests, that's going to be more effective than just hoping that everybody just does things out of altruism. And if you're going to be effective in bringing about historical change, you know, sure, like getting the, you know, getting like organizing workers is a better strategy than appealing to Jeff Bezos's conscience or whatever, right? Like all of that makes perfect sense. And I think that all of that is very much in line with what Ingalls is saying there, but none of that has anything to do with the idea that, like, you know, materialism by itself can tell us what's right and wrong. And that, I'm sorry, just is Marxist Sam Harris.
What would you rate this debate out of 10?
I don't know, three.
I was expecting at least a six. Wow. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, like, it's just some, like, part I heard at least starts out with some, like, incredibly weird stuff about, you know, about pedophilia and aliens, and, like, I as it went on, I kind of got the point, like, I got the point he was making with it eventually, but, like, I'm not quite sure why this was the example that's being used to make the point, and then, like, but then, like, the rest of the debate was just that, like, Uncompete was, like, just not getting this really, really simple distinction, and, like, also being mad about it. And Vosh, you know, was trying very hard to get him to see that really simple distinction. Also, like, at points, like, probably he would have done a better job of it if he had chosen slightly less edgy examples and just, like, sort of slowed down and been like, okay, I hear you, here's the germ of truth of what you're saying, but, like, also here's the thing you're not getting, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe non-compete was, like, too mad about it that, like, that wouldn't have mattered anyway if he tried to do that. Mm-hmm. It would have all gone the same way. But, like, part of the, I don't know, maybe three is too harsh, but, like, what part of the reason I think, like, not very many, you know, out of 10 is that, like, it never really moved on from the first point, right? Like, that, mm-hmm. there was just, like, one extremely simple point that they just, like, went around in circles about, and it just never progressed from there. So it's like that, I mean, even judged in terms of entertainment value, never mind, like, you know, enlightenment.
Yeah.
That seems like not a great debate to me.
Well, you heard it here first, everybody. Go, internet. Run with that. Go spread the word. Ben Burgess ranks it a three. Oh. Ben, where can everyone buy your much-needed book? Because it sounds like a lot of people here are hearing about you for the first time, and I think they should probably go purchase some literature.
Yeah, so you can... Actually, so I should say... Everything, any link that has anything to do with me, more or less, you can find if you just go to benburgess.com. You can find everything from there. But in terms of the book in particular, the place I would recommend getting that, I mentioned at the top of the segment, is Red Emma's. So Red, like the color, Emma, like the name, you know, redemmas.org is a worker cooperative bookstore in Baltimore that you can, you know, order books from online. And you know, and I like to support co-ops when possible. And also, it's, you know, they've shown me and before I was doing my own things, EMBS, a lot of love. And so I would like to direct some back. So go get it from there.
Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Let's do this more often. That was fun.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great learning project for everybody, because normally it's just a bunch of, like, Twitch jabronis like myself being like, debate good, debate bad, but, like, you actually can come from the perspective of, like, academia, which is nice.
All right. Thanks, lads.
All right. Cheers. So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times, and if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also everywhere social media is sold, basically thesurfs.tv, you'll find us there, twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Just, we beseech thee to smite down our enemies. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are but your humble court jesters, here to amuse you. To our lords, Trevor R., we give thanks for this spit of land for us to eke out this meager existence. To our knights, Merid, Cheryl Alvarez, Ruby Kelly, Ellie Leslie, Alex P., Brandon, Words Greenwood, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariane McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Coulter Smith, Val 9000, Jenna Tall, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Omni, Riley and Anna, Poodle Hawk, The Tim Caucus, Multi Mondi, Trevor Yanis, Lemmy 101, Anthropophojack, Saren 42, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Nkosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Baby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We raise our flag in a veil, and we salute you, our friends.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.